philosophy. You are worthy of her. She is worthy of you. Greet one another with a loving embrace. Say farewell to all other interests with courage and frankness. Do not study philosophy merely during your spare time. If you were ill, you would stop caring for your personal concerns and forget your business duties. You would not think highly enough of any client to take active charge of his case during a slight abatement of your sufferings. You would try your hardest to be rid of the illness as soon as possible. What then? Shall you not do the same thing now? Throw aside all hindrances and give up your time to getting a sound mind, for no man can attain it if he is engrossed in other matters. Philosophy wields her own authority. She appoints her own time and does not allow it to be appointed for her. She is not a thing to be followed at odd times, but a subject for daily practice. She is mistress, and she commands our attendance. Alexander, when a certain state promised him a part of its territory and half its entire property, replied, "I invaded Asia with the intention, not of accepting what you might give, but of allowing you to keep what I might leave." Philosophy, likewise, keeps saying to all occupations, "I do not intend to accept the time which you have left over, but I shall allow you to keep what I myself shall leave." Turn to her, therefore, with all your soul. Sit at her feet. Cherish her. A great distance will then begin to separate you from other men. You will be far ahead of all mortals, and even the gods will not be far ahead of you. Do you ask what will be the difference between yourself and the gods? They will live longer. But by my faith, it is the sign of a great artist to have confined a full likeness to the limits of a miniature. The wise man's life spreads out to him over as large a surface as does all eternity to a god. There is one point in which the sage has an advantage over the god, for a god is freed from terrors by the bounty of nature, the wise man by his own bounty. What a wonderful privilege to have the weaknesses of a man and the serenity of a god. The power of philosophy to blunt the blows of chance is beyond belief. No missile can settle in her body. She is well protected and impenetrable. She spoils the force of some missiles and wards them off with the loose folds of her gown, as if they had no power to harm. Others she dashes aside and hurls them back with such force that they recoil upon the sender. Farewell. Letter 54. On Asthma and Death. My ill health had allowed me a long furlough, when suddenly it resumed the attack. "What kind of ill health?" you say. And you surely have a right to ask, for it is true that no kind is unknown to me, but I have been consigned, so to speak, to one special ailment. I do not know why I should call it by its Greek name, for it is well enough described as shortness of breath. Its attack is of very brief duration, like that of a squall at sea. It usually ends within an hour. Who, indeed, could breathe his last for long? I have passed through all the ills and dangers of the flesh, but nothing seems to me more troublesome than this. And naturally so, for anything else may be called illness, but this is a sort of continued last gasp. Hence, physicians call it practicing how to die. For some day the breath will succeed in doing what it has so often essayed. Do you think I am writing this letter in a merry spirit, just because I have escaped? It would be absurd to take delight in such supposed restoration to health, as it would be for a defendant to imagine that he had won his case, when he had succeeded in postponing his trial. Yet in the midst of my difficult breathing, I never ceased to rest secure in cheerful and brave thoughts. What, I say to myself, does death so often test me? Let it do so. I myself have for a long time tested death. When, you ask? Before I was born. Death is non-existence, and I already know what that means. What was before me will happen again after me. If there is any suffering in this state, there must have been such suffering also in the past, before we entered the light of day. As a matter of fact, however, we felt no discomfort then. And I ask you, would you not say that one was the greatest of fools who believed that a lamp was worse off when it was extinguished than before it was lighted? We mortals also are lighted and extinguished. The period of suffering comes in between, but on either side there is a deep peace. For, unless I am very much mistaken, my dear Lucilius, we go astray in thinking that death only follows, when in reality it has both preceded us and will in turn follow us. Whatever condition existed before our birth is death. For what does it matter whether you do not begin at all, or whether you leave off, inasmuch as the result of both these states is non-existence? I have never ceased to encourage myself with cheering counsels of this kind, silently, of course, since I had not the power to speak. Then, little by little, the shortness of breath, already reduced to a sort of panting, came on at greater intervals, then slowed down, and finally stopped. Even by this time, although the gasping has ceased, the breath does not come and go normally. I still feel a sort of hesitation and delay in breathing. Let it be as it pleases, provided there be no sigh from the soul. Accept this assurance from me. I shall never be frightened when the last hour comes. I am already prepared, and do not plan a whole day ahead. But do you praise and imitate the man whom it does not irk to die, though he takes pleasure in living? For what virtue is there in going away, when you are thrust out? And yet, there is virtue even in this. I am indeed thrust out, but it is as if I were going away willingly. For that reason, the wise man can never be thrust out, because that would mean removal from a place which he was unwilling to leave. And the wise man does nothing unwillingly. He escapes necessity.